enjoying the World Cup? If you want proper analysis, honest opinions, and plenty of laughs along the way, give The Rest Is Football a listen. Gary Lineker, Alan Shearer, and Micah Richards break down the biggest games, the standout moments, and everything happening on and off the pitch with brilliant guests joining them throughout the tournament. Whether you followed football your whole life or you're just getting into it, they'll help you make sense of the drama, the tactics, the joy, and the heartbreak of the World Cup. Listen to The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Father's Day to all out there who celebrate. Nevertheless, welcome in Blake Ruffino, Joe DeLeon, Ruffino and Joe Show. Good evening. Good sir. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Obviously not as good as you are for your national holiday that you are celebrating. I don't have kids, so this was just a normal,
this was a normal Sunday. Happy future Father's Day. I didn't do anything.
You were telling me earlier you played NCAA. That sounds like the perfect. If I get to do that in 5 years when I have kids, then I'm going to be living the life.
Well, I'm also taking care of a sick young one, which is the most Father's Day thing ever. Also, right. By the way, working, because this is technically working for us. So, I mean, it's the most Father's Day thing of all time.
I mean, what else would you rather be doing than playing NCAA?
Not really anything. I just feel like it's a day, you know, like,
right.
Thanks for a couple of the gifts. You know, you and I will be in Nashville next week. This week.
Yeah, so, Thursday.
So really, that's my Father's Day gift to myself, you know. And right. Then I got a birthday in July. You know, I, as I've gotten older, people will ask me, like, what do you want for Christmas? I'd be like, yeah, whatever.
There's only so much you can get for somebody over the age of 25. It's like,
well, imagine.
I loathe getting gifts. I don't like getting gifts because
I would rather give people gifts than receive any. Because right. Here's the truth. Unless it's something like my wife gives me or my kids give me because I'm asking them for it, which, by the way, I'm paying for, I'm not going to use it really. You know, like I love being around people. That's why I love the holiday season. But nevertheless, it is Father's Day. So happy Father's Day to all of those out there that have children. Go and give them a hug, man. I mean, this is, you know, I think the thing that we should reflect on more is that it's really not about us. It's really about them. And taking care and providing for our loved ones and our children that we have brought into this world. So happy Father's Day technically to Ben and Jewel Ruffino. So glad that they are a part of what we're building here. Nevertheless, we are live. Everyone, do us a favor by hitting the like and share. If you're on YouTube, subscribe down below as we continue on our path as we are gearing up for the college football season. Hit that notification bell. Subscribe down below. We greatly appreciate it. Wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. And if you're watching us on the 24/7 Sports Twitter page, hit that retweet button as well. Joe, we got a lot to get into. A massive Friday's news dump. We will get to that today. The PSA is going to be hitting the Senate floor, it would appear, as it got a 19-9 vote in the Senate Commerce Committee. So we will talk about that. Hot Board Tracker. We'll can start doing these before the season. We start off in the great state of Nebraska as we go to talk about Matt Rhule. And as we finish on our path talking about some of these teams that we're doing deep dives on, we'll talk about the Virginia Tech Hokies. By the way, what's a Hokie?
It's a turkey. Oh, I forgot to wear my hat. I had my Hokies hat. Damn it. I forgot to put my hat on. What are you going to say?
Shout out to David Hofstetter, a good friend I grew up with. He, his dad, a long time ago when we were in high school, LSU was playing Virginia Tech and we were going to the game. So I go to pick David up at his house. Okay. And his dad's sitting on his recliner, God bless his heart. And he looks at me, he goes, "What's a Hokie?" And I go, "A turkey." And he just smiled big and was like, I guess he thought I wouldn't know. But nevertheless, I think of stories like that because I'm like, now we're talking about college football in general. But yes, it is a turkey. Nevertheless, it is funny. So we'll get into all that. Before we get rolling, though, a lot of recruiting news is hitting the boards over at 24/7 Sports. You need to get over there today. You can use the promo code RJ60 at checkout. Use that promo code to get 60% off of your annual VIP membership today. Joe, with all of these big time recruits, is Easton Royal going to flip? You got Marchand Sales that are still out there. Is he going to be going to Texas? Texas spending a lot of money. Go over to your local 24/7 board today or get a membership to follow recruiting and all of the intel as it flies in. Again, use that promo code RJ60 at checkout. You'll get 60% off of your annual VIP membership. All right. Everyone subscribes down below. If you haven't subscribed already, you need to. Give me a Father's Day gift by subscribing down below if you're on YouTube. All right.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Joe, on Friday, the Senate Commerce Committee voted in a 19-9 vote to pass the Protect College Sports Act. Senator Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell both had statements following the Senate Commerce Committee vote. Senator Ted Cruz also talked about John Thune, who is a senator, intends on bringing the bill to the floor for a vote. Now, you will have a short 60-day window to get that to the floor for it to be passed. But both Senator Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell had statements about the bill going to the Senate floor. The thing about this as well is before it was brought to the floor, amendments were brought that there are some financial changes about super leagues kind of going into the favor of the Big Ten and the SEC there. And Senator Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell both came out with a statement stating after having conversations with Tony Battiti, this coming from Ross Dellinger, after having conversations with the Tony Battiti in the Big Ten, they are moving figures down that would go to pretty much all P4 programs, protecting from super leagues. Commissioner Greg Sankey quote tweeted the situation from Ross Dellinger in stating, "I thought you didn't want this, and I thought that we did not come to an agreement." So, Joe, as a Friday news dump hits, and as we're both probably pretty tired of talking about this, What are your thoughts of the Senate Commerce Committee passing this bill and making the amendments, and what are your thoughts on it in general?
Well, my biggest takeaway with this, because as you said, we're kind of tired of talking about this because we have talked about this to death. We have talked about this at length. We have analyzed every issue with it, every positive aspect. My biggest takeaway from this is one thing that we haven't really discussed. The SEC and the Big Ten still remain opposed. And we haven't really explained why their opposition is meaningful for this bill. Today, I was kind of thinking to myself, like, well, what happens if they still say they don't like it? Can this get passed? One of the most undercovered aspects of this, Blake, is that there are several senators that have voted against the bill. In early stages of this, that have ties to the SEC and the Big Ten, to those states where those schools are based. Blake, right now, I think that there's too many people trying to frame it as the SEC and the Big Ten are being stubborn. They're not being cooperative. They are not being flexible with some of the aspects that are creating the biggest hurdles, and which ends up being the media pooling rights, and as well as the Super League language, all of these things. Like, I think that more people need to recognize if they don't make adjustments to this bill in favor of what the Big Ten and the SEC are looking for, it's not going to pass. It's not going to go through. I think people need to understand that there's a lot more urgency going on right now for this. And the Yankees president, who's a part of the presidential committee with this whole situation, he stated recently that if this doesn't go forward, then nothing will, trying to make it seem like the SEC and the Big Ten are the ones that are getting in the way. I am going to continue to harp on the fact that they need to take the damn pooling of meteorite stuff out. Tommy Tuberville is correct in what he said, in which we talked about on Wednesday. That stuff being removed from the bill is going to simplify this entire thing. Mm-hmm. And if everybody wants to continue to emphasize the importance of this specific bill, they'll recognize it's unnecessary if there is this much stubborn opposition from the SEC and the Big Ten, it should just be completely taken out. But I'm curious to see what happens if that pressure ends up working from Sankey and from Petitti.
Well, they're going to have to get two senators that are on their side of this in their state. Now, here's the thing. Here are the people that voted for it. Are you ready? Cynthia Loom. Well, how about this? I'm going to read it from the senators in what states they're from. You ready? Utah, Big 12. Wyoming, no P4. West Virginia, Big 12. Montana, not P4. Ohio, Bernie Moreno is one that has a vote inside of one of the big conferences. Ted Budd, North Carolina. ACC, who wants those pulling of media rights. John Thune, who is going to be bringing the bill to the floor, is a Republican from South Dakota. Deb Fisher is a Republican from Nebraska. Okay, so you have two in the Big Ten, but others are a part of the Big 12. Dan Sullivan from Alaska. And then you have, why is this blanking out? Okay, Marsha Blackburn, there it is, from Tennessee. You have other ones, Democrats or Democratic votes from Pennsylvania, Colorado, New Mexico, Nevada, and Hawaii. So what do I bring that up for? The reason that I bring that up is that majority of the votes on the Center Commerce Committee and the ones that were against, majority of the ones that are against it are in Big Ten and SEC footprints. The ones that massively went for this, where are they? They're in the non-P4 footprint, mainly in the SEC and the Big Ten. What happens when this bill hits the floor? Now, you talked about the people that were against it. Gary Peters, a Democrat from Michigan. Todd Young, our senator from Indiana. Go figure. And then Roger Wicker, a Republican from Mississippi. Go figure. So, Joe, the question is going to be, are they going to get the 60 votes that they need for this to pass? Right now, I really don't know. Maybe they can. Maybe they can't. Again, as you're going through an election cycle right now, all of that right now, I don't really know. Here's what I do know. You're right. The Big Ten and SEC don't want this. And it's for the best because you don't need the pulling of media rights. You don't need to be in a situation where you're limiting. But here's the biggest thing of all of this. You can't let senators have the right to micromanage college athletics, which is exactly what they're doing. I would back the bill if it didn't come off as, number one, I would concede pulling of media rights, Joe, if senators didn't have the right to micromanage the situation and if Ted Cruz would keep his mouth shut. Let me explain. It seems as if that Senator Ted Cruz is doing the bidding for other programs that are not in the Big Ten and the SEC. He came out with a statement yesterday or Friday stating, I can't, first off, narcissistic. He said the word I at least 45 times in the situation where he's talking to Ross Dellinger and media. Stop talking about I. Start talking about the sport. That's number one. Number two, he came at it from a premise in stating that he doesn't want to see a world where teams and schools like Baylor, TCU, and Texas Tech, which Texas Tech was the team that he brought up first, are not able to compete. Newsflash, Peter Pan, they're never going to be able to compete. Tell me what a backside guard does against a three tech on opposite side zone. You don't know. So we're letting a Rudy Poo out here who doesn't know anything about college athletics, college football, and college sports talk about the state of Texas. This doesn't do everything, or this affects everything, not just the state of Texas. You have three institutions that are in the Big 12 in your state. I understand it. I get it. But you're trying to do two things at once. And Joe, I got to be honest, having senators come out and state, like him, that they want to have power in all of this is a joke. You can't even balance your own budget. You can't even get things done while you've been in there. So spare me that you know what's best. And here's another thing. Don't tell me that he's not doing the bidding for others inside the state of Texas and the Big 12 and other conferences. Joe, the Federal Election Commission, the FEC, that does the auditing for federal campaigns. Why is Cody Campbell given well over six figures? Why is he given seven figures to Senator Ted Cruz? That's not my doing. The Federal Election Commission has Cody Campbell giving money to Ted Cruz and to the AG of Texas. And you're going to try to now start here and sit here and tell me that there's not BS going on. This smells toxic to me. Cody Campbell came out with a statement as soon as this bill was, or as soon as the Senate Commerce Committee passed this bill 19-9. And you're going to sit here and tell me that his statement, which I'm paraphrasing, this is the best thing for teams in the Big 12. No shit, it's the best thing for the Big 12 because you have the option to pull media rights. Joe, this smells. And you really want to know why the Big Ten and SEC don't want to give over on this. They don't need to pull any media rights. Why would they? You've been talking about this for a long time. They keep coming out and kind of talking out of both sides of their mouth. Why did you do an amendment literally right before the vote happened? Why did Maria Cantwell come out with a statement via Ross Dellinger saying that she talked to the Big Ten and Tony Petitti to make sure that the ACC and the Big 12 couldn't bring together super leagues? Joe, I know people sometimes look at me and tell me that there's conspiracy theories. You're going to have to start convincing me at the current moment, or at least giving me answers to Cody Campbell getting so involved, giving massive amounts of money to local political figures that either number one are a part of this bill or protecting Texas Tech. And now you're going to have to come at me and ask me, how was Maria Cantwell talking to Tony Petitti right before a vote happens? Joe, this smells. I feel like in all of this, especially with the Senate having some kind of micromanaged control, that they are doing this for power. That's what this is a power and financial struggle that is starting to get toxic. And I can't be convinced as of right now that anybody has the best ideas and spirit for the sport. You can't convince me of it. So no, I don't want it to pass. And this whole philosophy from Ted Cruz coming out and stating that, the Big Ten and the SEC will start dominating the little schools. Please tell me why you believe that they won't continue. He's calling for equality when equality's not going to exist. Do we need guidelines? Do we need guardrails? Without a doubt, we need them. However, this is going too far. You're fighting for the equality of small schools like Texas Tech who don't belong. I've said it. I said it.
Let me finish.
They don't belong in this context. They're not going to generate the revenue that teams in the SEC and Big Ten are going to generate. So trying to make them equal is a joke. They don't belong in the confines of an Alabama, Ohio State, Texas, Oregon, and all of those teams, and y'all know that. And they're trying to do this so that they can all be equal. That's not right. Let the best teams and the best brands make their deals for themselves. That's okay. What this is all about. So,
all right. I think that we just need to slightly reframe the last part. Look, at the end of the day, teams that prove their worth and their ability to move up and to grow and to compete at a higher level and the willingness to invest, those programs deserve to be champion. They absolutely deserve their role in the sport. So I know they deserve
their role in the sport.
I know. I think that you poorly worded that where it came off a lot. I know what you meant, but I'm trying to help you because Texas Tech fans are going to get pissed.
I don't care what they believe anymore.
Okay.
They've ruined this entire offseason.
In a way. So this is my issue with this, and I think that you alluded to a lot of it. The intentions of the bill have been revealed multiple times over the past couple of weeks with the Sorsby stuff, the more that Cody Campbell has come out and spoke publicly. And the fact that this is the most important part, the fact that there has been no movement on the pooling of media rights aspect of this bill. The fact that they won't make any changes in that regard, I think that reveals that this is not just a bill to help protect college sports. It is the Cody Campbell bill to help Texas Tech elevate and move its way up in the sport. Texas Tech is not going to be able to move to another conference. That is what I think that you were getting at here. Texas Tech would not get the attention from the Big Ten or the SEC to move to either of those conferences, unless they formed a super league and then took all the most competitive teams in the country. But nobody wants that. And the SEC and the Big Ten have emphasized that they don't want to do that. Texas Tech just sadly, even though they've put a lot of money into football, they don't have the footprint. They're not a big enough of a brand in the sport. They don't cover enough ground to the point where they're going to get the attention of the SEC or the Big Ten to move up to get gigantic media rights deals. The SEC and the Big Ten are always going to have the biggest media rights deal, unless the pooling of media rights comes to fruition. Because if they can pool media rights, there is not only a world where they can make a lot more money and Texas Tech can narrow the gap a little bit, but most importantly, the one fear that Sankey continues to bring up, the belief that they could get sued by the other conferences and the other teams in these conferences for deciding not to opt into the pooling of media rights, they could then force the SEC and the Big Ten years down the line into being in one national media rights deal. That is what I don't understand, is that why can't there be some sort of protections put in? Why can't there be some clear language? That seems like that's all that Sankey's asking for here is clear language that does not allow for the big media rights deal to be put together for the Big Ten, the ACC, or sorry, the Big 12, the ACC, the American, Pac-12, whatever it ends up being. They need to be limited in their ability to then pressure the SEC and the Big Ten if they don't feel comfortable with being forced into the gigantic media rights pool.
100%.
At the end of the day, those two conferences are going to be able to garner a lot more money negotiating their own deals. I find it very hard to believe, and Pete Bavacqua even stated this, those conferences are only going to see like very slight marginal increases if they were a part of a national media deal with whatever outlets that they end up doing. They're going to, and the next time that they get to negotiate, that number is going to go up further. So this all comes back to Cody Campbell having a desire to try and find ways for Texas Tech to get a leg up on everybody else. They're trying to skip multiple steps to get there.
Well, let me tell you why they're trying to do that. Of the top 20 games last season, from a viewership standpoint, ask me how many teams are in the from the Big 12 are in the top 20.
Zero.
One.
What was it?
Oregon versus Texas Tech Orange Bowl college football quarterfinal. 15.9 million views on ESPN. Okay. Want to know how many ACC teams? Two. Alabama, Miami. Florida State at number 18 at 10.66 million views on ABC. And then guess another one. Miami.
Was it the national championship?
But it's Miami and all of them. Miami in the national title. Miami against Ohio State, two Big Ten teams. Miami versus Ole Miss. Do you want me to keep going? None of this is revolved around the Big 12 or ACC. Do you want me to do the top 50? Because if I do the top 50, there's only two in there from the Big Ten. You want to know 50th, Baylor versus Auburn. Joe, you can go look this up. This is right on Gemini. They want it because they can't compete. They can't compete. I'm sorry, they can't. And the reason that Sankey and Petitti understand this, Petitti and Bavacqua more than Sankey. Joe, I have been harsh on Tony Petitti. I haven't really said anything about Pete Bavacqua. However, what do they know? Where do they come from? Television. And both of them are telling you that this will cripple the sport. And yet you want to continue to do it. Does Ted Cruz know anything about television? He knows how to go on it because he's always on there. So maybe he knows a little something. But let me tell you what he doesn't know. Viewership. He doesn't understand the capitalistic nature of this. You're a Republican. You talk about capitalism. Well, Joe, go to the top 50. The Big 12 doesn't have a team in there that's not named Miami. I mean, not named Texas Tech. The ACC doesn't have teams in there. Clemson, Florida State, Miami. Those are it. So you want to keep talking about the pooling of media rights. No wonder you want it. And let me ask just the simple overall nature of American policy. Can you imagine Jeff Kessler going and saying and fighting for the Big Ten and SEC saying, yeah, you can't do that. This bill's, even if it passes, it's going to get sued and lose. Because it's the same situation of you trying to tell a business without a collective bargaining agreement that they have to do something that's not a guideline. The word says optional. Why won't you give an amendment of what the word optional means? And Joe, I get what you're saying and what we've been talking about the pulling of media rights. I still don't think it's the biggest problem. The biggest problem is having the Senate have any hand in college athletics whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Just so we're clear on this, they want schools to protect non-revenue generating sports, especially the Olympics. Where does all of that money get funded from? Where does it all get funded from? It gets funded from one sport, and it's called football. So you think you know. You don't know. Joe, these people don't understand, nor do they know. I'm sorry, they don't. So as we kind of go along all of this, I know Greg Sankey is fighting. Joe, I don't know where this is going to go. This bill cannot pass, but I have no clue where it's going to go. But I look at this situation and say to myself, something has got to be done about Cody Campbell. Something has got to be done about Ted Cruz in this instance. You can't, how in the world, let me ask this question before we move on. How in the world does anybody that is associated in sports believe that having a Senate Commerce Committee have control of the sport or college athletics is good for anybody? How? Please tell me. So you can say that, well, Blake's an SEC homer, or he's going hard after Texas Tech, or he's going hard after the ACC or any of these other conferences. Do you agree that the Senate has the right to micromanage these situations?
No.
I mean, no. Joe, I'm sorry, but this is a joke of a bill. This is why I've been asking. Here's the truth about the SCORE Act, even though Cody Campbell was behind it. It got rejected because he had no idea what he was doing. That's just the truth. He got appointed by the president to doing it and had no idea what he was doing. They wanted a financial component. Guess who wanted the financial component? The senators. Guess who wanted micromanaging and why the SCORE Act didn't pass or get to the floor? Senators. Why was that? Because they wanted control. There's nothing changed in the SCORE Act, Joe. The three main amendments, there's nothing changed. Transfer rule, portal's not changed. They added the Lane Kiffin rule, a cap on agents, transfer portal. Nothing changed. So why didn't you pass the SCORE Act? What was the Senate trying to do? They added two components or three components. The Lane Kiffin rule, which, again, I will concede, or having micromanaged control and pulling of media rights. So what does that tell you at the end of this?
I mean, at the end of all this, at the end of the day, I don't think that this is going to pass. I think that the big hurdle that we have with this is that some of the most influential, not influential voices, but those that they're going to need votes from are not going to oppose the Big Ten and the SEC.
I hope not.
I think that that's going to get in the way. And I hope that somebody before, and we've gotten to like August, it seems like, I hope that there's enough time for them to make some final small adjustments and then we can move forward.
They'd have to go back to a Senate Commerce Committee for a vote if I'm not. Please bean count me on this, okay?
I don't know how it works, okay. So I'm not going to pretend I understand how it works.
I don't either on this. If what I understand is correct, if they make an amendment moving forward, it has to go back, okay, to a Senate Commerce Committee. I don't think they're going to try to amend anything.
Robert Levine, I think who the Yankees president is, he was the one who was kind of calling for the SEC and the Big Ten for everybody to get together.
Why is he even involved? And I love the Yankees. Why is he involved? Which
he was Trump. Trump put him on this. Trump put a random the committee that he put together has some of the most random people involved, and I think that's also his another
buddies. His buddies
issue with all of this is that Tuberville should really have had a larger role in all of this. And originally, it seemed ridiculous, but the reality is that Tuberville had the most sensible opinion. It's the one thing that he's useful for. It's the one damn thing that he's used for is actually providing feedback and understanding of what's going to work in a college athletics. And the bill that he presented was much better than this crap that we're dealing with at the current moment.
Let me ask you this question. Did you see Major League Baseball's announcement to the MLBPA this week?
I did. Yeah, I did.
First off, I would love it for college baseball. It would. Could you imagine Connor Griffin and some of these guys in a college uniform? Yeah. That would be ridiculous. However, they also called for the bill to be passed. What is Rob Manfred known for? Making shoddy ass deals.
I don't trust the opinions of any of the pro leagues or any of the players.
No, you should. And you should
be totally honest with you.
They have held the standard of bringing in high school dudes for a long time. And now all of a sudden they're coming out and backing. Hold on. They're coming out and backing the Protect College Sports Act. Joe?
Well, but Blake, they're backing these things because of all the key points on protecting athletes and all that stuff. There has not been any commentary from the pro leagues and the players associations on, I believe the NFL might have chimed in on the pooling of media rights, but I think it's notable that they're all backing it because of the important aspects of it that the thing that's so dumb about all this is that everybody collectively agrees that the changes that involve scholarships, the transfer portal, agent fees, and all the really simple things, everybody agrees on it and nobody's opposing it. That should be a sign that that's where the line should be drawn, but we're never going to get there.
Agreed. All right, let's move forward here. Everyone do us a favor, subscribe down below, hit the share button, hit the retweet button, wherever you're watching. Subscribe if you're listening to us via audio podcast. All right, this is my favorite time of year. Hot board talker. We finally get into this. We do this right before the season. Joe, we start tonight by going out to the great state of Nebraska, which times will be changed tomorrow. If you're watching us live, we'll be live at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time because of the great state of Nebraska. Game 3 of the College Baseball World Series will be live at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. Speaking of the state of Nebraska, hot board tracker, Matt Rhule. Should he be on it? Is he remotely close to being on it? After signing an extension, Penn State was allegedly after Matt Rhule, and he gets this extension to stay at the university and does stay at the University of Nebraska. Joe, your thoughts on Matt Rhule and a hot seat tracker?
Yeah, this conversation's much more different than the one that we did for Luke Fickell and Mike Norvell, because you just mentioned it, and he just signed an extension. He is locked down until 2032. His buyout is $71 million. But Blake, if you remember when we did the Kalen DeBoer one in reaction to his name appearing on hot seat lists at the very beginning of the offseason, even names that don't make any sense, there possibly could be a case made. I don't think that Matt Rhule gets fired. I think that would be a ridiculous premise if we were sitting here talking on this show. Like every Nebraska fan to understand, that's not what the point of this is. This to me is a perspective on how much pressure is on Matt Rhule to turn this thing around. How much pressure is on Matt Rhule for this team to be competitive this upcoming year in 2026? Him getting the extension that he did, as we discussed and reacted to it, was this sole circumstance of Penn State sniffing around and potentially hiring him to be their next head coach. And thankfully, that was enough for the Nebraska to commit to him financially. Like, I don't know, as we've had plenty of time to digest what he has accomplished at the beginning of his time in the first 3 years leading the Cornhuskers. I don't know what the accomplishment is that he can hang his hat on and say, well, things haven't been going great, but at least I did this. 2023, they went 5-7, signed the 23rd ranked recruiting class. 2024, 7-6, 20th ranked recruiting class. 2025, 7-6, 66th ranked recruiting class. And right now in 2027, they have the 17th ranked class, but a lot of it is boosted by the fact that they have Trey Taylor, who is one of the highest rated quarterbacks for this upcoming year. Hopefully they can keep him, because I'm sure, like we always see, a lot of guys flip. Keelan Russell was committed to SMU for a long time before he decided to end up at Alabama, after he did the same exact thing that Trey Taylor did, which was ball out at the Elite 11 and then earn himself an opportunity with a bigger program. Blake, I just have zero idea what Matt Rhule has done that he can say, oh, I'm turning this thing around. The direction is changing, because this roster, if anything, has stayed the exact same. And I don't know how a team that had the 66th ranked recruiting class is supposed to have some sort of transformation over the next couple of years, because the most important area for player and roster development, he's falling short.
I'm going to say something that is going to get you and I in a lot of trouble with Nebraska fans. Are you ready? I think that Matt Rhule is one of, if not the most overrated coach in college sports, because he gets this massive brand exposure for what happened all the way back in the day at Baylor and at Temple, et cetera. He goes to the Carolina Panthers. They fail. He comes back, and quite frankly, he's failed. What has he really done? Joe, in his career, he's 66 and 62 in his career. Now, you can say that he turned around Temple, he turned around Baylor in a situation when both programs were pretty dire. Okay, well, the last two jobs in the days of modern era football, what has he done? The last 2 years, or last 3 years, excuse me, at Nebraska, he's 19 and 19. Now, you can say it takes time at Nebraska and things like that. But, Joe, he's tied for 12th. It was tied for 12th in 24 in the Big Ten. He was tied for 10th in the Big Ten in 2025. I mean, did you not see every single little thing that just happened to Michigan and they finished fourth? Like, you're supposed to be this massive brand if you're Nebraska. So either you're going to have to concede one of two things. Either Matt Rhule's not that great, or you're not a good brand. It's a bottom line. Joe, I don't think he's a good coach. I think he's a good guy. I think he knows ball, but he's not a great coach. They have not recruited at the level that they've needed to recruit. They have not done things that they've needed to do to be competitive. And he's one of the highest paid coaches in the sport. Now, I agree with you. He's not getting fired unless all hell and anarchy breaks loose and Nebraska feels like that they have to cut ties. Or he does so well that maybe a job that we're not thinking about comes open, Florida State, that maybe that he wants to take. Okay. But that would
be hilarious, by the way, if he failed his way up that much. Sorry, well, continue.
Can I be blunt? Has he not been doing that his entire career?
Well, he was a good coach at Temple and at Baylor.
Had good seasons. He's had decent seasons. I wouldn't say that he's been a great coach. Like,
Temple's not supposed to be a good football program, and he had them. They hosted game day.
Sure, but how many coaches have had good seasons and then fall flat on their face? I mean, for crying out loud, Gene Chizik won a national title and then got fired. Ed Orgeron won a national title and then got fired. This dude is a sub-500 coach. Joe, do we need to go what he's done in the Big Ten? He's 10 and 17 in 3 years. Even if he goes 7-2 in the Big Ten, he still won't be 500. He'd have to go 8-1 in the Big Ten to be 500 in the Big Ten. Like, what are we talking about? They foolishly gave him an extension. Foolishly. That was a foolish move. Let him go to Penn State then. I think he's a good – I just don't think that he's a head guy. I mean, he has been subpar. And without those two good seasons, what is he? What is he? I'm sorry. He's so overhyped.
God, well, I don't think that's a hot take or ridiculous thing to say.
It's not.
We pulled it. This is the damn resume. The resume that I read. He has a buyout that's worth $71 million after three straight years where they couldn't even touch eight wins.
Oh my God.
Bo Pelini is like the fact that we ended up this far backward since Pelini and everyone believed that he wasn't accomplishing enough for Nebraska. This team hasn't had an identity. And this is where I don't have an expectation that this gets turned around. This is the whole premise of this conversation today. We're probably going to do a couple other coaches similar to Rule in the sense where they're probably not getting fired. It'd be improbable that they got fired. The chance is less than one. But the pressure does need to be on and probably is on. There needs to be some sort of a switch flip where this team actually becomes one of the better programs in the Big Ten. They're not even in the stratosphere of Minnesota.
No, they're not.
They're not in Minnesota has more consistency and produces better players, more talent than what Nebraska has done in these 3 years. At least you could sell me on Blake if they signed that 23rd ranked class, the 20th ranked class, and then we saw growth from those 2 years where they're starting to push towards the teens and whatnot. I can see the argument of
the portal. Hold on. Some of those guys hit the portal though.
Well, right. But Dylan Raiola is gone. That was one of the biggest chips.
Keanu Davis is gone.
Yeah. A lot of these guys have also not stuck around. So if there was at least gradual linear growth and then development for those first and second year, third year guys that now are emerging as key starters, and we're talking about them as some of the best players in the Big Ten, I think that we would maybe even be looking at his record differently. But again, there's no evidence of that. If anything, that there's been a stagnation or even a slight regression. The big thing for me also this upcoming year, Blake, they have really difficult matchups where it seems likely that they're going to finish 7-5 during the regular season again. They host Indiana. They go to Oregon. They host Washington. They host Ohio State. And they go to Iowa. I think Iowa's a better team than them. I think that they lose to Iowa. And I think they lose to all four of those other teams. And they have had a propensity to lose a silly game as well. So you're telling me that this team's not going to be 7-5 this year? The roster's the same. They didn't improve. Where is the jump, Blake? Where is
there
it?
Isn't. There isn't. I mean, like, Joe, I'm going to use this player, okay, as an example. Like, Paul Mabanga, okay, from LSU, transferred to Nebraska. They're expecting him to start in the interior. Joe, he got beat out by two true freshmen. Now, you can say, well, LSU is LSU, whatever. He got beat out by two true sophomores that, by the way, aren't at LSU and went to lower levels. They're not in the P4 anymore. Mm. The only one was Carius Kern, and he went to Ole Miss, but he got moved to tackle. Like, I hate to say it and be mean to a context towards Paul Mabanga because I think he's a very, very smart player. I really do. I think he's just one of the smartest players I've ever been around. That dude can't start in the Big Ten. Not when you're going about against teams that you just mentioned. It's not going to work. Your two top players that you got out of the portal or that left or were in the portal, they left your team and went elsewhere. One, bro, Dylan Raiola left you to go and be the backup quarterback at Oregon. I mean,
that's a red flag if I've ever seen one.
Look, Dylan Raiola has a red flag just as it's, you know, because of everything that he's done. And okay, so I could understand saying, well, he's just a problem in general. Anthony Calandria is going to lead you to eight wins. Anthony Calandria is going to lead you to eight wins. I mean, Joe, I'm sorry. I look at the roster. I don't think Hunter is going to be great at wide receiver. I don't think Gilmore is going to be great. And when I use the context of as it is, I don't know if he's going to be great. You have Paul Mabinga coming in. You have Brendan Black coming in. Joe, these are all guys that struggled for playing time at their former schools. I got to be real.
Wait, let me add one more guy on there. Tree Babelade was also awful at South Carolina, and he's projected
awful,
to start.
Was awful and got put in the portal. Got put in the portal in South Carolina, who had arguably
a team that has no offensive lineman. He got told to leave.
Exactly. That's the point. Joe, you keep saying 8 wins. So here's the thing. Matt Rhule's contract, Deion's contract too. You're paid as a top 10 dude. You're not. You're
Deion
not.
Deion at least won. Deion at least had one good season.
You're
the Heisman Trophy winner.
True, but this is ridiculous. And to be completely honest with you, Nebraska crumbled. They failed this situation. Matt Rhule has been a sub 500 guy, and you don't have the dudes. You would have to go on an elite scouting run just the way that Kurt Cignetti did. Here's another truth about Nebraska. They don't have a foundation. They don't have a central foundation of dudes coming in from the high school ranks. Joe, you brought that up earlier. You got four offensive linemen from the portal. You have six. You have six guys along your front seven that are brand new. Do what? So, I'm sorry. This is going to go over horribly. Here's the truth. He's about at a 2 of getting fired. He should be at a 9. He should be at a 9. Joe, anything less than 9 wins is criminal. It's criminal.
I think I give it 2 years. So they gave him the extension. I think that in 2 years.
Million? $50 million.
I don't see a world where they have a year in the next 2 years where they go over 7-6.
I agree.
Unless there's something crazy that ends in 2027.
Troy Dannon. I'm sorry. Troy Dannon has to go out the door with Matt Rhule. You can't let an AD file for or make that extension for a coach that's barely sub 500. Again, Joe, he's going to have to go. He'd have to go 7-2 in the Big Ten back to back years to be sub 500 in the league. It's not going to work.
That's insane.
Well, it's like to end this. It's like when Penn State people said that he was going to go there. What did we tell Penn State people there? Why would you do that? James Franklin? I thought Sark said it best. Okay, so he's having a bad year as James Franklin. Okay, understandable. He also got to a Final Four. Joe, we make all of these jokes for dudes like James Franklin who we're about to talk about with Virginia Tech. James Franklin won circles around this. Oh, Penn State didn't have bigger issues in the beginning than Nebraska? Coming off every single little thing that Penn State was coming out of? And he was getting to 10 wins in the Big Ten. So either you're going to have to come to a point and say Nebraska's not a big brand or Matt Rhule stinks. Pick one.
It's a hellish situation.
It's a hellish situation, but you're going to have to pick one. It's like looking at two fours at the bar. Pick one.
Hopefully the next coach in 2029 is much more attractive than Matt Rhule. Hopefully that's all that matters.
They got to go spend enormous amount of money in the portal.
That's been the expectation that they should be able to do that. And
you know what? You said earlier I was playing NCAA. I'm going to fire Matt Rhule, and I'm going to bring Nebraska back.
Nebraska would be a fun team for the CFP game. That would be a fun team.
The first couple of years. Yeah. Really stink.
Yeah. There's no local recruiting you could do.
No, not at all. All right, let's move forward. Joe, we continue on our path of doing these deep dives. Tonight, we go to the great state of Virginia. New head coach, kind of. Their old head coach is still on their staff. Today's
world. I forgot about this, by the way. I completely forgot about this when I was doing my notes.
So, two head coaches, technically. from Virginia Tech still on the team. At least, you know, good on them, by the way, for not letting pride get in the way. With that being said, new regime for the Hokies in 2026. How do we make the Sandstorm entrance fantastic again? Well, you got to do it by winning. Your thoughts on James Franklin in his first year for the Virginia Tech Hokies?
Blake, I really do think that Virginia Tech has an opportunity to finish as one of the top four teams in the ACC in 2026. They have a lot of positive signs to buy into for what they're bringing back from last year and with the new regime that James Franklin, all the new faces that he's bringing in as well. We're going to get to their schedule at the end of this. They have a bit of a tougher schedule than I initially thought, and I think a lot of people have depicted. But, Blake, they bring back 14 players who started for them last year. They're 12th in returning total snaps, 20th on offense, 16th on defense. They're first in corner snaps returning and 8th at edge. So they've got a ton of experience on defense. They have one of the best defensive linemen in the country and in the ACC in Kamari Copeland, who I think is super underrated, is a freakish athlete, is very, very gifted. They brought in Ethan Gronkemeyer, who I think Matt Campbell should have done whatever he could to get that kid to stay at Penn State instead of bringing in Rocco Becht. It was a huge misfire on his part, letting him walk out the door, as well as Luke Reynolds, who is one of the best tight ends in college football. They're going to be able to do a lot of multi-tight end stuff with Benji Gosnell. Apologies if I'm mispronouncing that. They have an underrated running back room with Marcellus Hawkins, as well as Jeff Overton. Their third string running back, who's 230 pounds, they call the Bulldozer, which is pretty fun.
Bill Davis is fun to watch. Have you seen him?
Well, I know. I knew you were going to know about him because he was a Louisiana guy, but he's a big MF-er, which I love that. I love that.
Dude, it is so fun because one game, I'm sorry to interrupt you. One game, his jersey got pulled up and my man's got, he kind of got a little bit of a gut. And I'm like, hell yes, make the dad bod great again. But I'm sorry, but Bill Davis runs the ball hard.
Oh, yeah. He's a great kid to have as your third running back. And it's kind of like stuff that we've seen Georgia do, where they always have the gigantic running back that just paves through people on short yardage plays.
Remember McFarland said that who was Benjamin something was a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end?
Kelvin Benjamin.
My man is about a half of a Popeye's biscuit away from being a fullback.
Yeah, he's 5'9", too, which is nuts. He's a bowling ball. He's as much of a bowling ball as he is. You're good.
Bill Davis. I get it. Yes, he was fun to watch.
The Bulldozer. The receiving room's interesting. Keyshawn Brown was the second really good receiver at Duke last year, who had 846 total yards and 5 touchdowns. And I like some of their pieces on defense as well. Blake, the ACC is not a conference that has a lot of contenders. It just doesn't. It's Miami, and then SMU is sniffing around. Pitt's going to have a pretty good team. Like, I think that there's a lot that needs to get figured out and worked out. Like, I like a lot that this Virginia Tech offense is bringing to the table here, and I think that James Franklin has always been a high-floor coach. This team should be good this upcoming year.
I actually agree with you. Now, I don't know if they can finish in the top four, okay, because SMU is still out there. I'm going to just say this. I don't think Clemson can do it. But they still have we'll see. You have Miami. I don't think Florida State can do it. We will see. Does Cal kind of surprise some people? Maybe have some upset games because they have a really good quarterback. I don't know. But I don't think you're far off. I actually like this team. Now, Ethan Gronkemeyer is going to have to build a little bit more. There were times last year, and I understand throwing out a first-year starter is extremely tough, but he made a lot better decisions than we saw from Bryce Underwood, with far less of a worse situation than what Underwood had. You brought up Sean Brown at wide receiver at Duke. You're right. That was a massive pickup for them. I really feel bad for Duke, by the way. They lost a whole hell of a lot. But you brought in Luke Reynolds. A lot of these guys, like Daniel Jennings and Exner and others came with James Franklin. But I look at them defensively, and this is the reason, because I feel like James Franklin and company can get some things rolling on offense. I like Grunkemeyer. You do as well. Joe, I worry about them defensively. Kamari Copeland, who, by the way, rewatching some of his film today, he led their teams in sacks as a defensive tackle at 4.5. He had 7.5 tackles for loss. Where are they going to get pressure? Is it going to come from Malachi Williams? Is it going to come from Curtis Jones? I don't know. Joe, they're one of the worst teams in the country last year getting after the quarterback. The same head coach that was over that philosophy is still there. So I don't know. I love the Cam Chadwick pickup from UConn, 4 interceptions a season ago. But, Joe, that's the place where I look at this and say, I know that Rhett Lashley can call plays. I know that Miami has got a whole hell of a lot of dudes. So I look at them and say, even though I believe that James Franklin is still a good coach, a really good coach that people just, because he had a bad year, people overreacted to. But I look at this situation and say, there are a lot of pieces that I like. And I do think that if what they've done, a top 15 portal class, maybe they can get into that fourth team in the ACC. But defensively, Joe, I got to be real with you. They scare me. Now, do I like David or do I like Copeland? Yes. Do I like Chadwick addition? Yes. They're not bringing back enough production or experience production at edge. Outside of Chadwick, I don't know about their secondary. And I don't even know if you look at him and say, well, you're playing in a lower division. I don't know. That's where I start having worries about them. Now, you brought up the Bulldozer. You say that he's not going to get them touches and might be that third back. Somebody forgot to tell Bill that, because this dude runs the ball hard. And if you know James Franklin, you know that you're going to want to establish the running game. How does that offensive line hold up? Maybe they're able to accomplish more than they did a season ago. But I am very worried about them defensively year one going into this.
And I understand that that's their – a lot of their returning players that they're bringing back that started for them for 6 games at least last year are on offense. I think it was 6 guys that they're bringing back. A lot of that's in their defensive backfield. I think that Kamari Copeland's the type of guy that can be super, super disruptive in the interior. He's really unique. He's 290. He's 6'2". As I mentioned earlier, freakish athlete. They were lining him up all over the place. He was playing sometimes in a 1. He was playing in a 3. He was standing up as a wide rusher. He is going to be, I think, a really good player for them, and he's had gradual growth and improvement year over year. This could be that final step for him emerging as one of the top players in the country. I watched him yesterday when I was watching some defensive linemen for the 2027 draft, and he really caught my attention. I think that, Blake, one other aspect of this that's really underrated. So they're bringing back 4 guys that on the offensive line that contributed. So Kyle Altooner was one player who was – he led all freshman centers in snaps last year. Johnny Garrett, Laith, Ganem, and Aiden Lynch are the 4 guys that started games last year. But when I was reading over on VT Scoop, which is the Virginia Tech 24/7 sports site, their projection for the offensive line included a couple of transfers. And I think that that's a really unique advantage to have – to have that much depth on your offensive line that you're benching guys that started last year. And if you need to, it's one of the biggest hurdles for any team in college football is that when you endure injuries and your starters go down, are you just grabbing a freshman who's 20 pounds underweight? Are you grabbing a random walk-on that's been on the roster for 4 years and isn't ready to play? A lot of teams don't have O-line depth like that. It seems like Virginia Tech quietly has one of the deepest offensive lines in the country, and they were a really underrated rushing offense last year.
Their
offensive line wasn't bad.
They were 34th in the – so I was about to bring that up. They were 34th in the country in rushing last year, Joe, 182.9 yards per game. And by the way, they stunk. Now, Drones had a lot of rushing yards now. So
– yeah, Grunkemeyer's not going to be doing doing all that. But it goes to show that they can get push, that their offensive line was just a bunch of scrubs.
I mean, Joe, they had almost more rushing yards than anybody in the country.
I think they were third in the ACC. I think that was what I read on VT's that I was reading earlier.
5.00 yards per carry.
Hawkins averaged 6.3 yards per carry. So they got juice. They got depth. Got some
push. Yeah, that offensive line, that's why I say I'm not really worried about them along their offensively. If Gronk and Meyer can get time, now I do think like teams like Miami is going to kill them. Mm-hmm. I do think that there's a potential he gets in shootouts with SMU. They can get push. And so that is the James Franklin recipe, by the way, is if they can do that, I think they're fine there. And I think Gronkemeyer can take a step. I don't necessarily know, you know, like as an example, Aiden Green returns. He had 516 yards last year. I think he takes a step mainly due to the fact that he's got somebody not named Drones throwing in the football. Joe, they can run the ball. But you're going to have to rely on a sufficient run game and pray to God defensively that these guys translate and do some good things. Because I got to be real with you, bud. I'm not there with them defensively. But to your offensive line point, they did get some push now.
Yeah. Yeah. You want me to take a look, pull up their schedule here and read up
their
schedule? Yeah,
sure. Let's pull up their schedule because this is where.
All right. I think that this ended up looking a little. If the team is still going through growing pains in the first year of James Franklin, this could be kind of a rocky year because there's some games on here against mid-level to the top-end teams in the ACC that they could hit a speed bump. There should be wins. I've got versus VMI, versus ODU, at Maryland. They could beat Maryland.
Boston College.
Or they could lose to Maryland. Maryland's a good team. At Boston College, Maryland's not a good team, but they're another team that brings back a lot of experience. Versus Stanford, tough matchups. I think that Georgia Tech has enough turnover that I don't think that that's going to be as hard for them. And then their toss-up games, which I think it could go either way, versus Pitt, at Cal. When you got to travel all the way to Cal, that's always hard. At Clemson, at SMU, at Miami. So getting road games, those four games on the road, it's a tough draw. And I wonder,
do they go
7-5 because of that?
Well, I got to be a little blunt with you. There's a team in the ACC that I do think that can do damage in the state of Virginia, and it's not Virginia Tech. It is Virginia. Like, people forget now, they bought in Bo Prabula, they brought in Peyton Lewis, they brought in Middlebrook, they brought in Rico Flores, which I don't know how more people didn't like Rico Flores from Notre Dame, UCLA. Like, I know, Joe, I saw Rico Flores do some interesting stuff when he played against LSU. So, I don't, like, maybe he can break away. I don't know. I kind of like him as a prospect. Deshaun Martin at Virginia was somebody that was interesting coming from Kent State, who this guy can absolutely fly. You talk about that schedule and even Virginia. Like, Virginia did some really good things last year. Back to Virginia Tech. Joe, starting going to Cal on October 10th, like, that's going to be tough. That's going to be very tough. Georgia Tech, I still think, is going to be a physical team. I know that you're not buying in on Clemson, but they got to go to Clemson. They got to go to SMU. They got to go to Miami, and then they got Virginia to end it. I don't think we know enough about this team to say, like, where they can be. I would put the floor at 6-6. I would put the ceiling at 9-3. It's a vat because you just don't know what you're going to get. Do I like a lot of the pieces that they have? I do. But, Joe, I got to be like, I could see him going to Cal and that being a late game. You're an East Coast team. You're playing at 9 p.m. Central or 9 p.m. West Coast time, 12 a.m. your time. Joe, then what if that game is literally starting the day off? What if it's an 11 a.m. kickoff? I mean, maybe it's a little bit better for you, but that's still a vast problem, a very vast problem. Joe, it's a vast range. I really don't know where to put my thumb on Virginia Tech. Do I like a lot of the pieces that they have? I do. Do I think that they can make serious damage? No, I do not.
I agree with the range that you put on here. They're going to be one of the few teams that we give a really wide range because the fully positive outcome is that Grunkemeyer has a great year, and all these guys that came over, as well as the returnees, their offense is great. Their defense maintains some of their identity when they were good at certain points when Pry was there as the head coach. But there is the possibility that you're facing a bunch of teams on this schedule that already have settled situations and established cultures, that there's an understanding of what they're bringing to the table this upcoming year. So 6-6, 9-3 is probably where I'd put it. I don't see them doing better than 9-3. I don't think that this is going to be a playoff team in any regard. If they go 8-4, I think that's a huge step forward, and it's a really nice foundation for James Franklin to take things into year two and to maybe become a playoff team in year two.
I don't disagree with you. We'll see.
Because they have a top 15 recruiting class right now.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're recruiting really well. I mean, that's going to change. They're probably going to end in the top 25, but it's much better than what they've been doing. Underdog with a $2 super chat just says, do y'all think Georgia Tech can win the ACC? Are you doubting Alberto Mendoza is the question. I think
that they're turning over too much. They lost their best offensive lineman. They lost Haynes.
I think Josh Petty is going to be the best offensive lineman I think he's going to be the best interior offensive lineman potentially in the state of Georgia this year. Five-star interior offensive lineman.
Drew Bobo?
Yeah.
Well,
I do.
All right. I'll take former five-star
interior offensive lineman. But to your point, Justice Haynes is there. They're going to be physical. Yeah. But here's just the truth about the ACC. If I don't know if Miami is finally going to win the ACC. There is no way in blue hell that I am picking anybody in the ACC not named the U.
Yeah, you can't not pick Miami. And if Miami didn't win the ACC this year, I'd be shocked.
Well, we've said that the last 2 years, and they found a way not to win it. And yet they've still – how about this? They've gotten to more national championships the last 3 years than they have ACC championships.
Yeah, that's partly not fully their doing.
No, but it's not. But, again, I don't think Miami's better. I don't think they're an overall better team. I think they're going to be a different team. But because of Darian Mensah, I mean, Mensah's 10 times better the quarterback, in my humble opinion, than Carson Beck was. I mean, that wide receiver core is ridiculous. So, no, I'm going with you. All right. As we said earlier, time change tomorrow. We'll be live at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time, so we hope to see you there. Until then, y'all have a great night. Peace.